He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
Welcome everybody here to the Lakers Lounge. I'm Anthony Irwin, today joined by, and always joined on Thursdays, by your boy Aaron, wearing Celtics green. It's the weirdest thing that he regularly does. I thought you guys were protesting.
Protesting what?
He's wearing an A's hat, for those of you listening. And I thought A's fans were protesting the team because they've been trying to mooch off the city forever, and then now are trying to mooch off of a different city.
Yes. The A's also got a perfect game thrown against them last night. So, I love the Kelly Green A's merch. So I've decided I'm not an A's fan. I'm an Oakland A's fan. So they're still in Oakland. So I'll support. Mm-hmm. Plus, I need a haircut. My hair grows too damn
the fast. Color green, man. Like, it's just,
you know what's funny is I actually I wore this hat to the facility, mm-hmm. to practice once and got I won't say who pulled
rightfully,
aside, but I got pulled aside. Like, what are you doing? I'm like, what, your hat? I'm like, I can't wear a hat. It didn't even occur to me.
Yep,
because it very clearly says A's on it. Very
you
clearly.
Wear it backwards.
Yeah, but it also has a MLB logo on the front.
It's
the
really
back,
small.
Right? Yeah. Okay.
The thing that people notice is going to be the color green. It's just like Jalen Hood Schifino rocking the green suit. Just like
that
you
was
can't
more
do
of,
that,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, and the Celtics do wear it. That darker color now. That kind of like darker emerald. Great suit, by the way.
No, it wasn't. Yeah, it was the wrong color. It was terrible color. I hate the color green.
Go ahead.
I hate the color green so much. I have hazel eyes, and I like to say that like my body fought the color green so hard that it was like, we're gonna compromise on brown and green.
Fair. I hate the color red because of the Stanford Cardinal. So okay. I don't think I have any red clothing. I don't wear red.
Yeah. All right. So it
and
is.
And by the way, that will be the extent of my contribution to this podcast. I poured myself the largest unnamed cognac pure white that has ever been poured.
Yeah.
And I will just sit here and mute my mic from now on. Go ahead. What are you talking about on the show today on this fine Thursday, Anthony?
So yesterday's news cycle was about Bruce Brown. And while obviously you can't get into the specifics as it pertains to a specific player, mm-hmm. I do think it's worth talking about what the Lakers would have had to do, what they would have to do to be able to use the non-taxpayer mid-level exception that they were going to use reportedly on Bruce Brown. Now, Mark Stein did throw some cold water on Brown specifically. And, you know, it always felt like more of a leverage play from Brown to try to get some team to pay him more than the non-taxpayer. But regardless, I do want to talk about the paths forward here where, you know, they could go with essentially what they've told us all along they were going to do, just some version of running it back, keeping their powder dry as they get into the season, as they head into the season, and then kind of tweaking the roster at the deadline or in the months leading up to the deadline as need be, or they can renounce the rights to Mo Bamba and not pick up, or I guess not guarantee Mo Bamba's contract.
No,
and
you
then,
have to non-guarantee him. You have to renounce his rights. You have that.
All right.
Correct.
So that verbiage. And then with Malik Beasley, they could not pick up his team option, to get them closer to the apron, which is like 170?
No. So You would have to, it doesn't get you close to the apron. You would have to do that to get under the cap, in which case then you would have the non-taxpayer mid-level. There's some other little machination.
The cap though, right? The tax apron.
No, because then you don't have the there's two mid-level exceptions.
Right.
There's the taxpayer mid-level exception, which is over the
$5 million.
They would have to be under the tax, correct? They would have to be under, yes, to have the non-taxpayer, yes, the full mid-level.
Yeah, because you're talking about cap space, and I'm talking about space under the, you know, because the non-taxpayer.
There is theoretically a path forward with cap space also, but
that takes a different discussion. Even more massaging. Yeah, that's a
different discussion. So the one thing I do want to point out, though, and because today is the deadline day for those two decisions, is the difference in, and you and I have talked about this offline, the difference between the non-guarantee and the team option. It seems very similar, but it is not. A non-guarantee is treated like he has a contract. So to put this simply, the CBA for dummies portion of this is, because I know this is kind of minutia that's difficult, the CBA treats Mo Bamba as though he has a contract until the Lakers decide theoretically to not guarantee it, which would then they would have to renounce his rights, which mm-hmm. does not give you bird rights. The bird rights end with that. The difference with Malik is that he is treated as though he doesn't have a contract right now until the team picks it up. So the team would have to do something to pick it up. Otherwise, it just if you don't hear anything, it's that he is not, the team option is not picked up. The difference, mm-hmm. though, is you do not have to renounce his rights. He just becomes a free agent, and he could come back.
And they have their bird rights.
Mm-hmm. You could sign him to whatever contract you want with his bird rights. If the non-guarantee for Mo, I mean, if Mo is non-guaranteed, he is then
renounced.
You renounce his rights, and then
you don't have bird rights.
You do not have. So then, for him to come back, you would have to use an exception.
So
I barely slept, which is why I was like, yeah, there's a path to cap space. You got to get under the cap. That's a different path. But yes, to have the non-taxpayer mid-level, you can be over the cap. You just cannot be over the apron. The difference, though, the problem, though, becomes if you use, and you would have, the Lakers would have the biannual exception also.
Mm-hmm.
The difference, though, is if you use either one of those, the non-taxpayer mid-level, or yes, then you are hard capped.
Yeah.
And those are the two triggers, and receiving a player in sign and trade. Those are the triggers for the hard cap. Shout out.
That was where I stubbed my toe on the whole Bruce Brown notion. I am not interested in the Lakers being hard capped, seeing as I think one of this year's bigger market inefficiencies is going to be spending, confidently spending, right? We even saw, dude, we saw Steve Ballmer turn down, you know, or, you know, show Eric Gordon the door after they traded Luke Kennard, after they pick swapped and gave up 10 pick slots in the first round of this
everybody,
year's draft.
We saw the Warriors dump Jordan Poole. Everybody is shook by it. And those two teams, the Clippers and the Warriors, is who this rule is designed for.
Yeah.
And those two are shook. So
and so like the reason I would rather not hard cap myself. No, those teams are shedding salaries to get under the second apron. They are above the second apron, and they are trying to get under it at some point in the next couple of years.
They're trying to get under it for next year specifically.
Yeah. The Lakers are under the second apron right now, and I think mm-hmm. they can get close enough to it where they get the benefits of spending, right? You increase your margins the more that you spend in a salary cap sport, and not have to worry as much about the stuff that like the Clippers and the Warriors are freaking out about, right? And I think that's
The Celtics.
That I think is the sweet spot, I think.
And the Celtics year. And Denver's freaking out about it also.
Yeah.
But yes, continue. Okay. Yeah. What else do you want to talk about? That's it. All right.
No. I do think so. What we're gonna try to liven up a little bit, because it does get kind of dry the more that you talk about like numbers and exceptions and all of that stuff. But Without getting too far into the weeds, I think that the two paths ahead here, whether it's for Brown or whomever, the path that would arrive at being able to use the non-taxpayer exception and the biannual, but hard capping yourself, I want to talk about like what that would look like personnel-wise here for the Lakers. And then I also want to present, and essentially like those of you who subscribe on Substack, this is essentially what I wrote last night for it regarding like the Lakers options here. But, you know, what it would look like and the upsides and downsides of not pursuing a Bruce Brown or that type of free agent, utilizing the mini mid-level and carrying forward that way. I also think it's interesting, before we even get into that, we just saw Jordan Clarkson pick up his player option. We saw Gary Trent Jr. do the same. We've seen Josh Hart push back his option decision date. I think we're probably going to see, unless we just don't get news about it today, by the time you guys are listening about it to this, and I'm just going to throw this up as soon as we're done recording.
So one thing about the Hart thing, though,
mm-hmm.
that is to give, that's not one of these like decision that was pushed back. So to push it back, both sides have to agree.
Yeah.
And that is because he's trying to give the Knicks some flexibility to do something and then
bring it back on bird rights
and then get it. And then, or do an extension. Maybe he picks it up and they do an extension, but he's trying to see what the Knicks can do with it if he doesn't pick it up. And that has to happen from both sides, to amend the contract, both sides, to amend that date, the option date or the guarantee date, both parties have to agree to amend the contract. So when you see that, they're kind of working, you know, they're working together, by the way.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I do want to come back to like players who have picked up their options, because historically speaking, under the previous CBA, most players of like Jordan Clarkson's type, Gary Trent Jr., they turned down that option for more long-term money, typically. the number of people, the percentage of players who are turning or are actually exercising their player options, again, really strikes me as, kind of tells me that the free agent market this year, teams, we've already seen teams are reluctant to trade. They're scared to trade like role players, right? And utilize draft picks because those draft picks are cost controlled. We've seen salary dumps for teams trying to get underneath that second apron or avoid that second apron moving forward. We've seen all these cost cutting stuff and you combine that with players picking up their options, and it makes me really think that this the cap space and the amount of money that's going to be spent, or just the free agent market in general, is going to be pretty dry this summer.
Yes. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
I mean, yes. I mean, well, here's the thing. I think it's twofold. Yes. I think, well, sort of. Because I think it is starting to have the intended effect for what the NBA at least claims to have wanted, right? They are trying to close the spending gap. I think that's what it is. I mean, because it's not just the reported part is all the teams that spend too much, or not spend too much, but spend like just exorbitantly and just don't care about the tax. The Warriors and the Clippers, basically.
Now the Suns.
They're trying to rein those teams in. But what the underreported part of it is they are also forcing the teams that were just hoarding cap space to spend more. Mm-hmm. So I think
it's... And now Michael Jordan is selling.
Right. I'm out. And they're changing the tax.
To do what?
They're changing the tax payments too. Or the distribution from the tax teams to the non-tax teams. Yeah. So I think it is. So at the top, yes, I think we're going to, it's going to be more dry, but at the bottom, you are going to get teams that are going to throw exorbitant amounts of money, like overpay people just because they have to, right?
Yeah.
You have to get up to the salary floor. So I think you're going to see shorter deals for higher, dollar amounts, just because teams, they don't want to tie up their money long term, but if you're going to have to do it, right? If you're trying to pry an unrestricted free agent and even maybe a restricted free agent away from the incumbent team, you're going to have to way overpay. And you may as well, because you're going to have to spend the money somewhere. It's, so I think you're going to see shorter term deals for larger sums of money. You know, the rumors about Houston, let's say. I was going to say something, but like, I don't know if you saw today the rumors about Houston having something in place with a couple guys. So if you if you look at that at its face, you say those dudes,
that was, one specifically, you can't say their names, I can. Fred VanVleet and Dylan Brooks. It has reached the point, according to Mark Stein, that it would surprise teams around the league if they didn't sign there. No time, so, no tampering going on though. None whatsoever.
No, of course not. So like for the shorter of those guys, it on its face looks like a huge, it looks like a huge overpay.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what it's going to take to get him away from his incumbent team. And it's only for 2 years. So, and what are they going to do otherwise, right? You may as well, you have to spend the money. It looks like they're not going to be reuniting with a former love. it looks like Houston will not be reuniting with a former love that they have. They're not getting back with their ex. It would not appear. So I think that's part of it. Yes, I do think
Stein, it's also for those who like who somehow didn't get the joke. James Harden, according to Mark Stein, is expected to re-sign in Philadelphia, and Kyrie Irving, on that note, also is expected to re-sign in Dallas.
So,
that's not tampering. That those guys can have something in place with their current team.
So, So I do think that's my one caveat to free agency is going to be dry. It is going to be dry in some cases, but there is going to be the lower spending teams or the teams with cap space are going to be forced to spend it. So I do think that can lead to some overpays, like purposefully, right?
I think that's what Bruce Brown is banking on.
He's still on our roster, right? So I can talk about him. But if a big offer from Austin comes from somewhere, my expectation is San Antonio, right? Because they have a bunch of cap space and he fits a need there also.
Yeah.
But they're going to have to spend it. So like it makes sense to throw, if you're way under the salary floor, it makes sense to throw huge offers out to restricted free agents because you have to spend the money anyway. And even if it's an overpay, that may be the only way you can.
It's like James Harden isn't going to like sign in San Antonio.
No.
Right. Like they don't have access to that kind of free agent.
No, Draymond Green is not going back to Detroit, right? that's not how this works. A good example of it is Indiana last year with Ayton. Like, is he worth the max? No. Mm-hmm. But if they're going to have any chance to get him, if you actually like the player and you're going to have a chance to get him, you're going to have to pay more. So, and then Phoenix ends up matching. If Phoenix matches, okay, fine. You cause them a little bit of pain, right? They paid more than they want to. So I do think the lower spending teams will have some movement in free agency. It won't be that dry, but towards the top, yes, it's going to be dry. The other part though, the reason why this free agency is going to seem dry is because the free agent class just isn't particularly exciting.
Yeah, there's also that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think those are the two reasons. I gave a very long answer for one of the reasons and a very short answer for the other, but those are the two reasons.
These guys.
The class itself is kind of dry.
So on the Austin part of it too, while we're just kind of talking about San Antonio in particular, they have the cap space to actually pay Austin more than the $12 million he's slated to get. They can smooth out the poison pill if they choose to do that. Whereas yeah, they can. No.
They cannot. The way that it works is whatever he is paid, right? He can only be paid like $12 million and 12 whatever in the first two seasons, whether that's with the Lakers or any other team. Uh-huh. And then it can balloon up to 30-something and 30-something in years 3 and 4. What though, the team that is signing him to that offer sheet, San Antonio in this case, has to have the cap space available this year for the entirety. They have to have the average cap space of whatever. So to make the math easy, it's like, say it was 4 for 100. That's more than Austin mm-hmm. can get. But let's say it's 4 for 100. San Antonio would have to have $25 million in cap space right now
yeah.
to sign him to that offer.
Which they do.
Even though it can only be 12, 12, 30, and 30. What you're thinking of is the incumbent team, the Lakers yeah. in this case. The Lakers have to have the same cap space available, the $25 million, if they were to smooth it. So the Lakers will not have the option to smooth it. It will be 12, 12, 30, 30, or whatever. Whatever the terms he agrees to, the Lakers will be forced into those terms because they do not have the cap space.
Which I think they're fine with for the most part. You know, I
mean, that brings up a LeBron question, an AD question, right?
Yeah, but like, you know.
And the new TV money is coming in a couple years, yeah. so the cap will go up. Wildly again. I don't know about wildly, but the cap will go up heavily again.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, right. So my point, yeah, what I'm saying is that, like, while the Lakers have LeBron and AD, I would imagine for the next season or two, Austin will be on a very reasonable number. Mm-hmm. And then when those guys are gone, if those guys are gone, and the salary bumps up, Austin will, I think, once again be at a pretty reasonable number. I think $30 million for a starting.
To be fair, I don't think he's going to get that. I don't think anybody's going to offer him that. But
even if it does, well, like, that's why. So the reason I say all of that is because, like, Mark Stein wrote that it was, you know, he had a source tell him that it was an automatic match, even if it's the max. And yes. I'm saying,
yes.
This is why. Like, this is why it's fair. An automatic match is because, like, it's a reasonable number for the two seasons while you need to keep your costs down a little bit because you're employing LeBron and AD. And then potentially after you're employing LeBron and AD, that number jumps up, at which point you're going to have to hit that salary floor anyway. And by the way, Austin Reeves is a starting point guard, shooting guard in his prime, and 30-ish million for that type of player sounds about right.
So I think the more important thing to do is not think of, and this is what happens, this is what teams do, like, the raw number doesn't matter. What teams do is think of it in terms of percentage of the cap.
Yeah, percentage. Uh-huh.
So, like, $30 million now is not $30 million 3 years from now, right? So I think it's more important to think of it as a percentage of the salary cap as opposed to 30 or 40. Yeah. Because, right, like, Michael Jordan made $30 million in a season, and it was absurd, right? And there wasn't a salary cap then, so you could just pay dudes whatever you... Or, excuse me, there wasn't a maximum salary then, mm-hmm. so you could just pay dudes whatever you want. And then nobody got that again for a while, and now, like, $30 million, right? Now $30 million is just kind of like, all right, that's a lot of money, but, like, good players get $30 million. So
yeah.
I think percentage of the cap is what's meaningful.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing. I would add to that that, like, comparable salaries and comparable players is also a thing that I look at, and starting caliber guards, whether it's a shooting guard or a point guard, make that number, at least, I would say. Unless they're on, like, a rookie scale contract in which, like, or they're restricted free agents or whatever, and that's a whole different thing altogether. But anyway, back to the main point here, and I'm keeping an eye, by the way, like, if you guys are watching and you see my eyes kind of darting one way or the other, it's because I have my phone down here and it is peak notification season.
Yeah. So, do you have the right ones, notifications on the right ones? Or are you going to get had?
I have been had already, but that's because somebody was impersonating Tim Reynolds of. Just like if you're going to do it and you're going to get people, that's how you're going to get people. Because I do. I have Woj, I have Shams, I have Haynes, and I have Stein. Those are the four accounts that I get notifications mm-hmm. for. Okay. And then, by the way, can we, like, quick detour on Shams?
Sure.
All right. So while the draft was going on, he is, by the way, employed by FanDuel. And this is why this caught my attention.
Yep.
While the draft was going on, the odds for the second pick were swinging all over the place.
And not while the draft was going on. In the days
like heading into, the yeah, heading yep. into the draft. Yeah, I guess while the draft was going on, for the vast majority of the draft, those guys have already been taken.
Did you see somebody? So fair, I think it was like minus 20,000 for Wembanyama to be paid first. Somebody bet like 60 grand to win 300 bucks on Wemby going first.
So here's my thing. If you have the money to drop 60 grand on something like that, why aren't you dropping like 100 grand or a million or whatever that returns you?
Because it's a joke, right? For the joke.
Yeah.
Well, having 60 grand to drop is a lot different than having a million to drop.
But I guess most of these books have...
Because if you have 60 grand to drop on that, you don't care about the $300.
Yeah.
So it's just like for the bit, for the joke.
Yeah. I'm pretty stoked though. Avery does have $300 worth of donuts that she gets to.
From Wemby going first?
Yeah. Yeah.
That was actually me.
Yeah, that was me. All right. So anyway, in the days leading up to the draft, the odds for the second player taken were kept jumping back and forth between Scoot Henderson and Brandon Miller. Mm-hmm. And a big reason why that kept on jumping back and forth was because Shams was going out there and saying one way or the other. They kept on saying names that this is who they're looking at. They're looking this way. And then the odds were swinging. People would put money on it. And then they would swing back and he would say the other thing. And then
but it was also Woj, them going back and forth.
Yeah. And so Woj, though, is employed by ESPN, which, fine, you know, you do your reporting for ESPN, and you do your reporting from ESPN. That isn't to say that ESPN doesn't have, like, DraftKings money coming in, right? They do have partnerships with those companies, but it's not the same as being in the employ of one of these companies that does directly benefit from people losing money based off of the reports that go out there. So anyway, Shams does all of that. Somebody notices it, tweets it. That goes crazy viral. I didn't mean to talk about this today, otherwise I would have pulled up the tweet. But it goes crazy viral, and we haven't heard from Shams since. FanDuel put out a statement. We do not know what Shams is going to report before he reports it, to which I would say, what are you employing him for then?
So here's what I will tell you.
Let me just really quickly just wrap this up. The only thing I misspoke. I did see a video report yesterday. But he has been nowhere near visible as he would typically be. And it made me wonder if FanDuel or his employers have just kind of said, like, hey, let's sit this one out. Let's let the news cycle carry on.
All of those guys, this is when they
make their money
so much, but make their names, right? This is how you become a titan in the news breaking in the NBA industry. This is time. This is the time.
Oh,
the
I forgot. I also have Fisher on my
notifications. Yeah, as you should.
Yeah.
So the point I was going to make is that may be true about what FanDuel said. You know, we don't know what he's going to tweet before he tweets it. That may be true. And maybe it is true because they're not a news entity, right? But every news entity, I know this to be true. ESPN, Fox Sports, CBS Sports, everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
They have before any of their talent
journalistic standards.
Before any of their talent is allowed to break anything, they have to run it by their news desk first.
I mean, I've done this. So with Vox, for example, it was made known to me, and I've told some of this story before, but it was made known to me that the Lakers were beefing up their analytics department. And I'm not going to go into the sourcing on how I knew that, because that's funny. Maybe when I'm like 80 years old, it'll be, cause it is a funny story, and I'm no longer in the industry, but anyway, I'm not going to burn a source over it. But what I will say though, is that I was told about it by multiple people, had it confirmed and all of that stuff, told Harrison, hey, this is something that I'm confident in my ability to report. He then spoke to Seth, who was his boss, and I had to tell both of those guys, I had to go into a meeting with both of those guys to tell them what my sourcing was, why this was applicable information, why it was worth reporting, blah, blah, blah. We then had to reach out to the Lakers to ask them for comment on it. At which point they said, who the fuck is Fred Irwin or Anthony Irwin, whatever his name is? Why does he have this information? And we were just like, he just does. So do you want to comment on it or not? And they were really angry about it, but we just moved on. And it was like, it was a story that put them in a positive light. They were beefing up their analytics department. That was something that fans really wanted at the time, and still prioritize. But anyway, to your point, like, that was a multi-step thing to report a very small story, you know, that involves the subject itself. And like, this is why, you know, journalists get up in arms at the way that, like, the Schefters, the Woges, the Shams of the world operate, because a lot of those steps are now being skipped. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. So, I mean, the point is that it's possible that FanDuel is telling the truth as it relates to Shams, but every other house,
if so, it's not a great look either.
every other shop, every other house. I mean, again, I made the distinction that FanDuel is not like a news organization, but is Shams's Bleacher Report also, right? I think the Bleacher Report and the Athletic, right? No, yeah. Not the Bleacher Report, the Athletic. So the Athletic certainly, mm-hmm. he has people that he has to talk to at the Athletic before he just sends something out there, especially since the Athletic is now the New York Times. Like, they're, yeah. So maybe that's true with FanDuel, but yeah, there were some wild swings in the, you know, whatever, 36 hours up to mm-hmm. the draft, who the odds on the second pick. Yes.
Yeah. And now he is a lot quieter than he typically is. And I'm kind of,
especially
wondering,
this time of year.
Yeah. And I'm also kind of wondering if that might signal, like, if we're going to start, because, like, there were reports last year about Schefter that he was, now look,
he was letting the subject of some of his articles
redline his articles,
editing power. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, that is very different. Like, when I was at Vox, reached out to the Lakers for comment, you know, we weren't like, no, we're not, I wasn't changing my story based off of what they were telling me to say there. That's very different than, like, handing your story, giving them the edited version of the story, already edited, telling them, here's your red marker, Mr. Editor. I think he even called Dan Snyder. And then changing the story based off of what the subject wants it known about him out there publicly. Potentially on some really important shit, because we now know how Dan Snyder was operating, by the way. But anyway.
Can we talk about this for the rest of the show? And
And then, you know, and I know that, like, people, like, you know, journalism is boring and all of that stuff, and I get it or whatever, but, like, it is, I do kind of wonder if this is one of those inflection points where, you know, more people are made known because they are losing money over it, how some of the sausage is made, and if we are going to start to regulate the making of said sausage.
This is going to be our worst show ever. We have spent it talking about journalistic standards and integrity and CBA minutiae. This is going to
I know. And look, like, this is where I probably need a producer to yank me away from some of this stuff. But, like, I don't know. I try to like focus on stuff that I think people should be focusing a little bit more on. And by the way, like, we are going to, it's June 29th. Tomorrow is June, you know, today at some point we're going to get word on Mo Bamba and Malik Beasley.
Okay,
and
so I think that is going to. Here's what I will say about that. I was like, here's what I'll say about that. And then had to be like, wait a second.
You stepped out onto the cliff. You're like, that's a real long fall.
How high are we?
You sure that's okay?
Okay, so here's what I will say is I think.
Do you like jumping off high stuff into water?
That's why people stuff. That's why people shit. Why? What? Why? What is, like, what's fun about that? No. There's so many things that could go wrong. No, absolutely.
I flip
not.
Off of that stuff. I have pictures of me, like, upside down 15 feet over the water.
That's awful. Fun. Why? No. And first of all, nobody should be going anywhere near water. did we learn anything from the last week or so? We ain't supposed to be in the ocean like that. For me,
In fairness, that was Tahoe.
Rivers, like, creeks, lakes, ponds.
There was nothing in Lake Tahoe.
I'm not
that was
a
gonna...
bath. Like, no bodies of water. I will not even. I'm not dipping a toe in.
The name of the show is going to be Hygiene, White People Stuff, per Aaron.
No, well, hygiene is not white people stuff, unfortunately. You can go to Twitter, it'll tell you that. I bathe once a week. You do what?
I remember one time.
No, don't, like, the people that
do
don't
wash your calves?
Yeah, don't. They just let the water run over you? Yeah. Hygiene is not white people stuff.